You are now listening to a podcast made in collaboration with the Copenhagen College Radio.
Hey guys and gals, welcome to episode 14 of the Social Media and Politics Podcast, bringing you expert insights into how social media is changing the political game. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, PhD student in political science at the University of Copenhagen. Thanks so much for tuning into the show, and thanks for telling a friend. Remember to check us out on Twitter at SMNP Podcast, as well as our Facebook page, facebook.com/socialmediaandpoliticspodcast. On Wednesday, March 15th, Dutch voters will go to the polls to decide which parties will govern the Netherlands for the next 5 years. With a population of just 17 million people, the Netherlands is a relatively small European country whose elections usually don't get too much coverage in the international press. However, against the backdrop of Brexit and the election of Donald Trump, journalists and political pundits are watching this election very closely. And that's not just because of looking back to what happened in Britain and the US. It's more about looking forward to two other major national elections in Europe this year. France kicks off its national elections in late April, and the EU's economic juggernaut, Germany, is slated to hold its federal elections later in September. Since Brexit, the common thread running through elections across Western democracies has been the rise of anti-establishment parties and the challenge they pose to the political mainstream. So the question for this election is, will the Netherlands continue this anti-establishment trend? And if so, what might that mean for French and German elections later down the line? In the Netherlands, the most well-known anti-establishment party is the Party for Freedom, generally referred to as the PVV. The PVV is headed by Geert Wilders, and for those who haven't heard of Geert before, he's kind of like the Trump equivalent for the Netherlands, but he's been at the political game for a while now. He's known for making controversial statements about immigrants in the Netherlands, particularly Moroccans, and he and the PVV are pushing a major immigration reform. They've placed issues like multiculturalism, globalization, and the Netherlands' EU membership into the Dutch national debate. The PVV is currently polling among the top three parties, alongside two center-right parties. One is the People's Party for Freedom and Democracy, and the other is the Christian Democratic Union. Now, in terms of the other major topics of this election apart from immigration, it's important to remember that the Netherlands is recovering quite well from the economic crisis compared to other European countries. Unemployment sits at a five-year low, and economic growth is in the range of 2 to 2.5%. So the major topics of this election are less about the economy, and instead, social issues such as healthcare, pensions, and the retirement age are primarily what's being debated. To get a first-hand glimpse into what's going on in this election, as well as how social media is being used to campaign, I've invited Dr. Christoph Jacobs to the show. Dr. Jacobs is assistant professor at Radboud University in Nijmegen, which is located in the south of the Netherlands. Dr. Jacobs is an expert on Dutch politics and has conducted extensive research on how Dutch political parties use social media to campaign. Together with his colleague, Niels Spierings, Dr. Jacobs published a book last year entitled Social Media, Parties, and Political Inequalities with Palgrave Macmillan. You can follow him on Twitter at ChristophJacobs1. That's ChristophJacobs1. Christoph, thanks so much for taking the time out, and welcome to the Social Media and Politics Podcast.
Hello.
So I've been reading up on this election, and it's hard to keep up because elections in the Netherlands are just such a bonanza. Some of our listeners might need a quick brush up of their Dutch politics. So can you tell us a little bit about the Dutch political system and why Dutch elections are kind of a special case?
Yeah, sure. The main distinguishing feature of Dutch politics is that the electoral system is the most proportional in the world, meaning that you have a lot of parties. You have the Green Party, for instance, but you also have the Party for the Animals, which is also a Green Party, actually. You have a left-wing populist party. You have a right-wing populist party. You have a Party for the Elderly. You actually now have three populist radical right parties. And then you also have the classic liberal party, the Christian Democratic Party, and the Social Democrats. So there's a lot of parties, and all of these parties, they are competing for media attention, making it very difficult to follow Dutch politics sometimes.
Am I right? And then it's 28 that are running in this election?
Yeah, there's 28 that are currently running in the election. If I have to believe the latest polls, around 13 or 14 of them will actually get seats in the parliament.
Huh. I mean, for our American listeners, I mean, imagine if everyone that was running in the primaries you could actually vote for into government. It's kind of, maybe it's hard to relate in a two-party system to a 28 plus. It's crazy. Before we get into the specifics of this election, let's talk about the book that you put out with Nils Spierings last year, which is called Social Media, Parties, and Political Inequalities. Which I think is very relevant for this show because you've done a lot of interviews with Dutch campaign strategists and Dutch political parties. So can you tell us a little bit about the book and what you were looking for in those interviews?
Yeah, sure. There were basically two things that started the book. And the first was a study done on Australia. And it was a longitudinal study. And the conclusion of the authors was that after a while, the bigger parties saw the advantage of social media and decided to invest in it. And that was puzzling for us because you have these small parties that are ahead. They are the first to use social media. But then suddenly the big parties, they find the motivation to start investing in it. And that was quite puzzling for us because to us, social media was always characterized as something that was cheap and easy to use. Now, it's pretty strange that something cheap and easy to use, and then by investing in it, you are able to catch up. So what is going on there? So we thought we need some behind-the-scenes information there. We need to talk to these campaigners to find out what it is that money can buy you, actually. And the second reason why we did that study is because most of the existing work deals with countries that only have very few smaller parties, often only a Green Party. And if you come to the conclusion that the Green Party is doing well on social media, that might be something that is not necessarily linked to the fact that it's a small party, but it just might be that the Green parties are the exception. Mm-hmm. So in a country like the Netherlands, where you have all these strange parties, but also, for instance, a lot of populist parties, it's really interesting to like look at these parties and how they use social media. And in fact, it turned out that especially the populist parties are quite interesting. When we interviewed people from the left-wing populist party, they told us that they were actually quite hesitant in using social media. That's not the first thing that we think of when we think of populist parties and social media.
Right, because they're more connected to the people, in theory, right?
Yeah, that's what we always believe. And the funny thing is that if you look at what they do on social media, they tend to basically ignore the people. If they get questions, they're less likely to answer these questions. They're less likely to follow people. They are more likely, though, to retweet tweets by their friends, which kind of resonates with this idea of an echo chamber and creating or contributing to an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. But it doesn't seem that they're using social media to get linked to the people. And in fact, it's quite funny. We also tried to interview the PVV in 2014, but we didn't manage. And later on, it turned out that they don't, or at least at the time, they didn't have a social media person. They only hired one in 2016 as the last party to hire a social media manager.
Really? And yeah. Just to clarify for our listeners, the PVV is the populist right-wing Geert Wilders party.
Yeah, it's Geert Wilders' party.
And of course, I'll ask you a little bit about that later. But so they didn't have a social media presence until 2016?
Well, they didn't have a person responsible for social media. Uh-huh. And they are obviously on some social media, but their candidates and their politicians are less likely to be on them. So Geert Wilders is. But the other candidates and members of parliament, they are very reluctant in adopting social media. And it's the same for the left-wing populist party, actually.
And any idea for why that might be?
Yeah, that's obviously the million-dollar question. And so our interviews with the left-wing populist party, they suggest that, especially for populists, quite often the party structure is more centralized and they want to keep control over the message. And social media actually empower individual politicians. And each of the politicians that have a Twitter account give them their individual press conference and makes them less dependent on the party person who is responsible for press relations. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to have internal conflicts, and they also didn't want to empower their individual politicians.
Yeah, and I think this was one of the interesting things about the book, which is it's not necessarily that you're comparing social media use across parties, but actually that the candidates within the individual parties sort of had their own strategies, right?
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. So there are party strategies, but there's clearly also candidate and individual strategies. And the individual politicians, they use social media to basically increase their standing within the party and to build a profile.
Which is super interesting. And I think that you sort of came at this, I mean, you used some quantitative data, but also through interviews, which is kind of lacking in this field of research. But I think there's kind of more research coming out that this seems to be more the case, that it's about individual promotion rather than party promotion.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So what's your kind of take on, is the campaigning, so it's different among politicians, but at the level of parties, do you find that some parties are sort of being more innovative in their social media use, or is it becoming more standardized kind of across the political system?
Yeah, both actually. That's quite interesting. What you see is that all of the parties are currently adopting some sort of a social media strategy. If you, for instance, now look at the Twitter account of Geert Wilders, now they're finally adopting their own house style, and their profile pictures, they are sharp. They're not fuzzy pictures anymore. So it's definitely professionalizing at that basic level.
Mm-hmm.
But you see some parties that are more innovative. And in particular, if you look at the communication that is coming from the conservative liberal party, VVD, the party from the prime minister.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing some pretty interesting stuff. They're also using video clips, and they're very interactive, and they respond to communication from other parties. But it's actually in particular the Green Party who is really innovative. And the reason why is that they were able to hire Blue State Digital. And that's the company that also advised Barack Obama.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Right. So they're still at it, huh?
Yes, they are. They are. I think they're trying to conquer the European market. I don't know.
Yeah, but them and Cambridge Analytica, right?
Definitely.
So your book was looking at Twitter use kind of in the early days of its adoption, right? 2012, 2013. And that's totally, totally legit, because I don't know if all our listeners know that in the Netherlands, Twitter is huge. It's not like many other European countries. I think they're the second highest per capita.
Yeah, could be indeed.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people who are active on Twitter, and especially opinion leaders and journalists and important people.
So and so you were interviewing them kind of at the earlier stages of their social media adoption, right? So have you noticed any changes either on Twitter or in terms of newer platforms like Instagram, Snapchat, or has it kind of been the same as it was 3 or 4 years ago?
Yeah, so the parties are definitely trying to innovate. And since 2014, most of the parties actually have a person that is responsible for social media. And these people, especially in between elections, they have quite some time. So they have the time to experiment, and to follow courses and to do things. So in election times, they're super busy. But in between elections, we notice that they have a lot of time to experiment, and that's actually what they are doing. So especially they're trying to use new social media. So they're moving to other platforms, in particular Snapchat and Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing is that the parties seem to be experimenting there, but the voters are not really following. So the number of followers is really low. And it seems that the Dutch people are not that interested in following parties on Instagram or Snapchat. So that's quite intriguing. The parties, they want to, but there doesn't seem to be a popular demand there.
That's interesting, because one of our other guests on the show, Chasen Campbell, he was working with Rand Paul with the American presidential election, and then also with Benjamin Netanyahu in the Israeli election. And he was saying that one of the biggest differences for him is the campaign period. So in the U.S., it's like a year and a half, right? Whereas he was saying, like, in shorter campaigns, it's much more intense, and it changes the way that they use social media. So how long is the Dutch campaigning period?
So formally, it's only 3 weeks.
Okay. So they have basically this time in between to test, and then they kind of go crazy in those 3 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah. And they prepare themselves before. So they have these WhatsApp groups and these Facebook groups where all the volunteers are gathering, basically. And then when there is an important moment in a television debate, quite often what happens is that there is a message posted in these Facebook groups or WhatsApp groups requesting all the volunteers to become active on Twitter and to try to influence the general feeling around the candidate.
Uh-huh. So this like citizen-initiated campaigning.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. So speaking of craziness in campaigns, let's talk a little bit about this election. What's the kind of general picture as of now and what should we look out for?
Yeah, the interesting thing is that there's a lot of voters that are still undecided. So especially at the left side of the spectrum, there's a couple of contenders and there's four parties in particular that still might gain a lot of votes at the expense of the other three. Mm-hmm. And that's D66, which is a social liberal party. The Green Party, GroenLinks, that's the party that hired Blue State Digital. And then the classic Social Democratic Party that is currently in the government and the left-wing populist Socialist Party. So these parties are all competing. And so far, not a lot has happened. And we had two television debates, and there are still a couple scheduled. But these two television debates did not yield any big change. Mm. So media nowadays they're talking about the absence of a game changer. But yeah, so none of the parties and the candidates has really made a mistake. And so all of them are very professional and it's very, very close.
So is it very civil? Is there not a lot of negative campaigning, I mean, other than from the populist parties?
Yeah, it's interesting that you mentioned this. It's actually quite a very civil campaign. But that might be due to the fact that Mr. Geert Wilders is largely absent from it.
Yeah, and I wanted to follow up on that because what's interesting for this show is that when the campaigning kicked off, Geert Wilders, who already has around-the-clock security, that he decided to sort of stay out of his public appearances and only interviewed with journalists and use social media in order to communicate his message. And so my question is, if we look at what's going on in the States, every time Trump tweets, it's a massive media blitz around what he's tweeted. Is it similar with Wilders or?
Yeah, normally it is actually. So in non-campaign times, quite often what he tweets immediately gets into the newspaper or on television. But it seems that in this campaign period, all these parties are sending out messages and media seem to, they want to give a lot of people airtime. So they're not exclusively focusing on Geert Wilders. And, well, the things that he posted have fallen flat. So he's not successful at all, actually. And I think he misjudged there. And nobody could have predicted this. But the campaign just goes on. And it seems to have left Mr. Wilders behind.
That's super interesting because, I mean, do you think that's a calculated move on the part of the media? Because I think if there's anything to be learned from the 2016 U.S. election, it was that the coverage of Trump just sucked everyone else's message out of the room. So do you think maybe the media is purposefully not giving that attention to Geert Wilders in order to allow the other 27 parties to get their message across?
I don't really think so.
No?
Because most of these media, they tend to follow politicians. As in, there's just so much that these politicians are sending out. There's so much competition for that media space, that limited media space. And by abstaining from the two television debates, there was a lot of coverage for the other parties, while there was only very limited coverage for Mr. Wilders. I don't think it's actually a calculated move by these media and journalists. And as a result, I also think that the last 1 week might be completely different, because in the debates that are still scheduled, Wilders will be present. And it might be that the last week is completely different. So I'm not really expecting the media to purposefully shut him out for the rest of the time. It just seems to be a consequence of the fact that he withdrew from the television debates and decided not to campaign.
Mm-hmm. And so keeping on the point of the media, what about fake news? That's been a topic that's been super politicized and, you know, often associated with social media as kind of a means for spreading fake news. So is this something that the Dutch are engaging with or are aware of?
They're very scared of fake news. So they are paying a lot of attention to it. And in fact, Mr. Wilders tweeted an old photograph that was photoshopped. He didn't really hide it, actually, that it was fake. But there was this whole commotion in the media about this, where he was accused of spreading fake news. So there seems to be a very, people are really very much paying attention to this, to avoid fake news.
Interesting. And I think they're probably better off for it, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So one of the issues, as I was reading in the news, and this may just be the media coverage, is that immigration is a big topic in this election, as it is in a lot of European countries and beyond. And I remember from your book that ethnic minorities in the Netherlands are highly active on social media relative to other parts of the population. So are you aware of any online campaigns sort of set up by ethnic minorities or kind of grassroots campaigns that are voicing their perspective on the immigration debate?
Yeah, there is a new party called DENK, which literally translates as think. And it's a party founded by two breakaway politicians from the Social Democratic Party. And they explicitly reach out to the ethnic minorities, and both of them are Turkish. MPs, or they also have the Turkish nationality. And so they are extremely active on Facebook. And they used their very high number of likes and followers on Facebook as an argument towards the classic media to get more media attention by saying, hey, you see on Facebook we have a lot of likes, meaning that there's a substantial group that you are basically now excluding. So you should give us more media coverage. So they use their popularity on social media to get into the classic media. And it worked. Unfortunately, one of the quality newspapers, NRC, was able to get into the WhatsApp group of the party. And they found out that party was using fake accounts on Twitter to bully other politicians and journalists. So yeah, these fake accounts that caused quite the controversy. And nowadays, as a result, the party has a lot less attention. But they're still trying to spread their message via social media.
Interesting.
Fascinating story.
So there's a lot of speculation as to whether the PVV, Geert Wilders' party, will get the most votes. And if they do, or even if they have a strong showing, what implications do you think this has for Europe? Because this is kind of one of, a couple elections coming up. We've got the French elections and the German elections, and there's this whole talk about the rise of populism, rise of anti-establishment parties. What might a successful showing for the PVV mean for Europe, in your opinion?
Yeah, it's very likely that the showing of the PVV has more of an impact to the rest of Europe than on the Netherlands itself. And what I mean by that is that if he becomes the biggest party, it will be another case or another example in that big narrative of a populist rise across the Western world. Mm-hmm. Even though Geert Wilders was polling at around 40 to 42 seats in 2015, nowadays he's only polling 21 to 25. So the virtual support has dropped quite significantly, almost halved. But nevertheless, if he becomes the biggest party, the international media narrative is very likely to be that Geert Wilders won the election. Even though in this country where there's only dwarves, he's the biggest dwarf, doesn't mean that he's a giant.
Right.
But internationally, I'm guessing that most of the media attention will be about how and why he won the election. Now, in the Netherlands itself, it's extremely unlikely that he'll get into the government, and he will be way too small to force his way into the government. So for the Netherlands, it will be just business as usual. But for Europe, it might be just another example of this populist surge.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I definitely, as you've seen with Nigel Farage kind of hooking up with Fox News, it might be a similar type of dynamic going on there.
Yeah, I think it's a very good comparison.
All right. So last, I have a surprise question for you, which is no matter who wins and no matter what coalition is formed, do you think that the Netherlands will be able to officially become second?
Will they become?
do you know what I'm referring to?
Yes. We have this. We have this famous guy, Arjen Lubach, who made this movie. Will the Netherlands become second?
Exactly. So, for our listeners who don't know what we're talking about, go to YouTube and type in Netherlands second. By the way, did you know that on the White House's webpage there is an official petition to make the Netherlands second because they asked first, and it reached 65,000 signatures, but not 100,000 for the White House to respond.
Fantastic. So I might have to sign as well. Cool.
Well, Dr. Jacobs, thanks so much for coming on the podcast. Appreciate your time.
Yes, you're welcome. It was fun.
I've just been speaking with Dr. Christoph Jacobs, assistant professor in political science at Radboud University in Nijmegen. You can follow him on Twitter at ChristophJacobs1. And that's a wrap for this episode of the Social Media and Politics Podcast. Next time, Dr. Anna Maria Ducek-Segestin from Lund University is going to guest host the show and talk about the role that social media played in a recent anti-corruption protest in Romania. Until then, keep up to date with all the latest announcements about the show through our Twitter account at SMNP Podcast and also our Facebook page, facebook.com/Social Media and Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Becetta, signing off from Copenhagen. See you next time.